Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stitch, people who stab canvas. How's that?
Oh, you know what I did today? I stabbed paper. I'll tell you about that later.
Okay. Because somebody sent me a picture. Oh, a friend of mine who knows that we do this, he sent me a picture of a cross-stitch thing that was something about just shows that I have enough patience to stab anything 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. I'll be curious about paper. Yep. So, a bit of explanation here. On Sunday, we have Kathleen Littleton from Cross Stitch Antiques, and it's just me on Sunday because we recorded it last week, and when we recorded it, Christine had just been a day away from a significant car accident, and obviously she's okay because she's with us now, but head got banged around and a concussion, and so she couldn't join us for that, and yeah, here she is now, but still recovering from that concussion.
Yeah. So here's the first example of symptoms of a concussion is that now you've got me completely confused of the order in which we record things because we recorded Sunday before today and now, yeah. So I will just put this out there that I'm, yes, just a week post-accident, very easily distracted, having a lot of trouble with language. I say things that I don't mean to say, and I struggle with words and all those things, or I mean to say something and completely forget what I'm about to say. So I was on the phone with my oldest friend in the world, and he said, you know, it just makes you sound more thoughtful, like you're considering your responses. So I thought that was a very generous evaluation of my ability. So I will depend on everyone to give me a little bit of grace when I stumble a little bit, which I will definitely do, especially as we go on during the podcast. So for all of you who have been through this before, God bless you, because this is miserable. There's nothing like knowing that you can do something and then having that ability completely ripped away from you. And then it's like having your mental hands tied behind your back and feeling like you're pitching forward at every moment. That's kind of what it feels like. So I'm going to do the best I can, and feel free to laugh at any moment, because we have to laugh about this because there's really nothing else to do. It will heal. The car won't. and that's about all there is to say about that. We're just going to stumble along a little bit, and that's okay.
Yep. Your car, a testament to today's car technology. Everything but the passenger compartment scrambled, and
yes.
You stayed in your seat where you belong and walked away from it. So yeah.
I did. The car, it was utterly decimated. I was hit by a pickup truck. And I was completely stationary. So, and the pickup truck was going about 30, 35 miles an hour. So, yeah, the car did not survive at all. There is literally one taillight that is still existing, and every other piece of glass, every other piece of plastic, lights. The lights aren't even, you can't find them. There's no body part that isn't damaged. There's no car, but the passenger compartment was completely fine. So I walked away. So that's pretty good.
That's what they're supposed to do. That's impressive. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I have to write a letter to Fiat and tell them they did a pretty awesome job.
Yeah. They probably wouldn't mind hearing that, though they've tested it,
no.
I'm sure.
Yep. Was sitting in the hospital. And that was one of the things going through my head was, I need a piece of paper to write a letter to Fiat. In the hospital, but I'm in the hospital, so thank you.
Yep. So as I say, on Sunday coming up, if prayer is part of your life, Christine could use it, because recovery is in process here. So
it is. So yep. And a little bit of patience, and that's all I need.
I think we're going to call this your Rodin the Thinker phase. I think we're going with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yes. I could just see the statue, though, but because the statue is, instead of having like the head with a fist, it's going to be the hand with a hoop in it.
There. Yes. Yes. The stitching
right?
thinker.
Because I can't go to work. I have been off of work for a week, and I'll be off for at least another week, if not more. So there's not a lot I can do.
But you are able to stitch. So this is, you know, this is a thing here.
It's a struggle. It really is. I'm trying to do counted cross stitch, and it's difficult because I can't really count. I had to. This is how bad it is. So normally I'm good at math, right? Math just comes naturally to me. And I was trying to explain it to my son, and I said, you know, I just like the answers to math things just appear in my head. I don't calculate things. They just like, if you're calculating change at a register or a tip, that just, it just pops into my head. I can't explain it. Just that's how it is. Right. So I was at a restaurant the other day and I had to pay a bill. And I was sitting there looking at it. I couldn't figure out how does one calculate a tip. I literally could not even figure it out.
Ooh.
It was not. And I sat there. I'm like, how do you do this? I don't know how to do it.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So counting, like all those things, right? So yeah. This is difficult. So counted cross stitch was getting a little tricky. So I decided it would be a fine time to go back to surface embroidery because there's no counting there.
There we go. There we go. Stab it on the line. Yeah.
That's right. So that's where the stabbing paper came in. So what I was working on was I had planned on doing this project that was a copy or sort of an interpretation of a tile that is – it's an Armenian tile that was made in Jerusalem. That's a whole long story for another day when I can put it together a little better. But it's birds on a tree. But the background is this beautiful cobalt, like a dark cobalt blue. So in order to transfer this pattern, because I had to kind of hand draw it because I only had a photograph and the photograph was all distorted. So I had to hand draw it. So that's something I can do because it doesn't require math. So I had to hand draw it and then I had to transfer it onto a dark blue silk, right? So how does one do that? If you're going onto light fabric, you can just put the light fabric over your dark trace pattern and trace it, but can't do that with dark fabric. So what do? I go to our friend Mary Corbett's site and learn the prick and pounce method. So what that is you take your pattern and you trace it onto, I traced it onto kind of sketch paper. So it's got a little bit of heft to it. So it would hold up to the needle. Did that in pencil, did it over again in pen. So I had a line I could see and then, went over all the lines with a pin to poke holes in it. And then I have the fabric now is set up on stretcher bars. Pulled really tight. And now what you do is you put your your paper with all the holes poked in it on the fabric and you hold it still. I have a little magnets, a little really strong magnets. So I'm going to magnet that in place. And then you use powder, white powder, and a pouncing tool, which is basically just felt. And you put the powder on there and you basically rub the powder in through the holes and that transfers through. And then you can take, you can either paint it in or you can take a white pen, and just connect the dots, and then blow the powder away. So that's the transfer method. So that's the stabbing I did today.
So what is the powder kind of like, Taylor's chalk or something?
You can. Mary had used talc.
Oh, something as simple as that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you could use talc. I had thought about experimenting with a powder that I use at work, which is It is silica silylate. I'm shocked that I remember that. We call it's the
See, you're
trade name.
Healing. You're healing as we speak. You see how this
right?
works?
Yeah, it's this weird. The amnesia is like it's short term memory, but my long term memory is pretty good. So it's this. I don't know where you could find it, except there's a makeup. There's a what is it called? It's called high def powder. If you go into like fancy like Sephora or makeup places, they'll have what's called like high def powder. It's white. It's almost like old fashioned. What do they used to call that? I forget what, like dusting powder. But this is sort of like the modern, more technologically advanced version of that. So this high def powder, is really, it's actually pretty amazing. If you put it on your skin, it blurs everything. So if you put it on your hand, it's kind of neat. You see no pores, wrinkles, lines, anything. And so that's why they call it high def powder, because it just completely blurs everything. It's almost like Photoshop. They call it Photoshop powder. So I thought at the time that it would be fun to try that, because the interesting property it has is that it's extremely lightweight. So it's almost dangerous to work with in like large quantities, in industrial quantities, because it flies away in the air so easily. So I didn't know if that would make it better or worse if you wanted something that had a little bit of weight to it that would just kind of fall through the holes. And as I'm talking, I think that something weightier would probably work better. I don't know. So I think I'm going to try the talc because that's what I have. And we'll see how that goes. But I might try the aerogel at some point just on a scrap piece of fabric just to see what it does, just for fun.
Yeah, there's the old key. Go ahead and try it on a piece of scrap.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, you don't ruin the good cloth, yeah.
Right. Or on, you know, a piece of dark paper, really. It doesn't matter. I just want to see if it goes through the holes and if it kind of bonds to the fabric. Or yeah, I guess fabric would probably be better, right? And if it blows away easier, because that's the thing, it's so light. I don't know if it would work better or not. And it's easy to get, right? That's the other nice thing. Mm-hmm. Just go to the Makeup Forever is the brand, and it just comes in a little jar. And their brand is almost all just that material. So it's pretty cool. So I'll try that someday, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay, we'll look for a report.
Yes.
Speaking of Mary Corbett, the woman is dangerous. No, she's just dangerous. Because she makes me spend money.
Uh-huh.
See, she's just... So she did a thing here a few days ago, for those who didn't see it. If you're not if you're not on Mary Corbett's list to get her her two or three time a week news posts, or getting it through a feed or something, you're just absolutely missing out. But so it comes up last week sometime. Have you tried tulip needles for embroidery?
Oh, I read that whole thing.
Yes. And so Mary does a review of this brand of needle called Tulip in Hiroshima. Tulip Hiroshima needles from Japan. And her testing to see if they were really any better than the Bowen, I think that's how you say it, Bowen needles. That's what I use. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite. And turns out that's her favorite too, but I don't use them because it's her. I just had always had, but that's her favorite. So are the Tulip needles, which are about $1 a piece for needles. So as needles go, they're pretty expensive. And so she went through, and it turns out that in her efforts, which involve quite a bit, they are worth it. They are polished from stem to stern. The embroidery needles sounded like deathly sharp. And just all the way around better. But, you know, they're just pricey. And she says she bought some, and then she bought some more, and then she bought some more, and now she guards them viciously because of the expense. But
yeah, I think the thing with me too, because I read that and I had seen them. I forget where it might have been, Needle in a Haystack, because I was ordering some things to kit up a new Debbie's Designs piece that I want to do. And I had to order a bunch of needles for that. And I saw them and I had thought, I wonder why they're so expensive. What convinced me that the next time I place an order, I will probably get them is that she said that they are expensive, but she seems to feel they last longer because they keep their point longer and they don't, it's not tarnish, but wear, so they don't get rough on the edges. So yeah. you're getting more use out of them. So over time, I guess they're economical because you don't discard them. Help me out, Gary.
I don't need to help you. You got it. I mean, that's pretty much what she was talking about. And then the other thing that I thought was really interesting is, of course, you can imagine, you talk about repetitive stress syndrome, as many hours as Mary has stitched over the years, and she said that she suffers from hand fatigue. And I'd be surprised if she didn't. And she said that the embroidery needles are so sharp and so smooth that when she's stitching with them, she doesn't even think about the soreness or hand fatigue, that it just kind of goes away. And I thought, wow, that's a needle that's sliding through fabric pretty nice. And she said that she had tried going back and forth between Bowen or whatever and these tulip needles and kept coming back to the tulip ones because of that they just stitched so much smoother and nicer. And I thought, wow, that's quite a statement to make. And plus, if you have a physical a physical test you can do with every stitch, and pretty soon that problem, you just don't even think about it anymore, then that tells me that there's definitely a difference for the money. Is it worth it? Well, for her, it sounds like it's really worth it.
If you're stitching through multiple layers of fabric too, sometimes it gets tricky, you know, it does, because you're forcing a needle through, you know, especially if you're stitching through like a really dense kind of fabric and multiple layers, it's not easy. It's not like needlepoint or, you know, cross stitch where you're going in between fibers. You're going right through. And yeah, I know my hands start getting sore. So it's not only, you know, dealing with present soreness, but it's probably also good for preventing soreness from starting to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, it sounded to me like, well, plus, you know, why not? So I did. I bought and they sell them in assorted packs. And I got them from, she recommended Paducah Needlework or something like that.
Hancock's.
Yeah, in Kentucky. So I ordered a package of, I think it's 8 in like 4 sizes of embroidery needles, and another package of 8 in 4 sizes of tapestry needles. So not here yet, but on their way. And so we'll see. But they had a pricing on it that made it less than $1 a needle. So like it was less than $8 for the thing. So we'll see. But obviously, it's at some point, it's probably overkill for most of us. You know, you really don't need to spend that much for needles. But when I look at somebody like Mary, I mean, I stitch a minuscule fraction of the number of hours that I'm sure she does. But for somebody who's doing that, you know, that can be a huge difference maker.
If you have any kind of finger, if you have any arthritis in your in your fingers, that's a huge difference.
Yep. So, yeah, so I thought it was, you know, and plus Mary's just an enabler. I mean, come on. So I ordered some, so we'll see. But she sure made a good case for it. And she originally bought some from somebody on Etsy, and it sounded to me like she got scammed a bit, if I can say that, but she certainly didn't get them packaged the way they should come, because they are supposed to come in a vial with a cork and then in a little box that is tied off with a piece of silk ribbon. Is the way they're supposed to come. And that's the way they're shown on the Paducah website. But she did not get that. And what she got crushed in the mail. and blah, blah, blah. And so her first attempt was not pleasant at all, but then she decided to try it again and ordered. I'm not sure she says where she ordered from, but she did offer this Paducah as a place to get them. And that was last week. And you know, it's not unusual when Mary suggests something for the business to be out of whatever the product it is within a day. And yeah. So several days later, I thought, well, they'll certainly be out of these needles. Everybody's bought some, but they had them. They had them. So we'll see. But for me, it's a play toy. For somebody like Mary, yeah, it's probably a necessary weapon. So.
Well, and any tool that makes, you know, your work easier to do is a good tool.
Right. Well, and I'm stitching on this sampler, and I'm using a 26 or 28 needle, I'm not sure which, small needle anyway, and it's bent, but it's still in good shape, so I'm using it. But she talks about how these tulip needles have a little give to them, but they don't take a bend. They tend to spring back. And because she talked about how as you use it, especially smaller stuff, you tend to bend the needle. And like my beading needle, I have a beading needle that will never, ever be straight again. But
those you can see why those would bend.
They're barely stiff wire, yeah. So I thought that was an interesting feature, too, because this needle that I have, I actually have thought about replacing it, and I have several to replace it with, but you know, it's the one I'm using, so I don't want to give it up. But yeah, it has a nice little bend to it. Yep. Advantageous at times and then problematic at others. So anyway, I bought some tulip needles, so we'll see what they're like. And, yeah. And then I mentioned last week that I was, putting edging on and, working on a bunch of ground cloth. And, because I'm going to do some those Mary's sampler alphabet. I'm going to do some sampler alphabet things. And so one of the most of the thread that she uses is floche. And so I posted where to get floche, where I wouldn't have to wait, you know, for somebody to order it for me. And several suggestions. And because most of them were out west, and I didn't want to wait several days. I don't know why. I just didn't want to. So I tried Stitchville, USA, Debbie Clark's shop in Minnetonka, Minnesota. And called Debbie Clark at Stitchville, USA, stitchville.com. And I'm saying all that. And I paid full price. So I'm not promoting because I got it for free. No, I paid full price for the floche. But I called her up and I said, hey, you people tell me you have this. And she says, yep. Got every color. And I said, okay, well, these are the colors I need. And one of them was a blue 809. And she says, that's not a color. And I said, well, I'm looking at Mary's thing. And Mary says, it's a color. And then she started to freak. She says, I take great pride in having every color of floche. So let me check. And so then it became a thing. And I went back and I looked to see if Mary had done a correction that to a different color and hadn't. And so I said to Debbie Clark, I said, look, I'm just doing this stuff. I'm not going to win any awards with it. Pick a blue that goes with those other colors that I've ordered. Just pick a blue that goes with them and I'll be fine. You know, come on. At some point I was wasting her time worrying about whether 809 lived or not. And, so she did. She picked a blue and sent it and put a note in that said that she had actually checked, with her supplier and everywhere else. And 809 is not a color. So I got to write to Mary and say, hey, did you mean that to be 80 something else? So anyway, Debbie Clark sent me. So I have to say, it was a lot of fun when that envelope arrived 2 days later to pull out this big wad of floche in all kinds of colors, because that's a really nice thread. So, yeah, that was fun.
Those are the good packages. Yep. They always surprise me because you'll go, you know, I'll go to kit up something and – you know, especially something like a sampler or anything else that, you know, has maybe 20 or 30 different thread types and things. So you expect this giant box because somehow in your head it's this giant order.
Right.
And then you get, you know, a business size envelope.
Right. Well, and that's what it was. It was $65 worth of Floche that came in like a 5x7 bubble pack. This envelope has $65 worth of thread in it. It should be presented to me. And But anyway, it was fun. So if you're looking for Floche, that's one place to go. Stitchville, USA, stitchville.com. Debbie Clark, she fixed me up, got things in the mail. It was very helpful. And enjoyed chatting with her. So there you go. Let's see. Oh, you see it time and time again about people saying, how do I get creases and wrinkles out of linen or really any ground cloth? And the sampler I'm working on right now, that was a problem. And we talked about it, that I had asked people how to do it. And somebody had said that they just put a dab of Dawn in a large bowl with tepid water and thoroughly soak and swish around the linen, and then take it out, then rinse it out thoroughly in fresh water, and then wrap it in a towel to soak the water out of it, and then steam iron it, and that does it. And I had great success the last time. And this time I had two pieces of linen for samplers, so two large pieces, and then I had several pieces of Alba, the Alba linen it's nice linen that I got from Needle in a Haystack that Mary uses. It's the stuff that Mary uses as her primary linen. And so I had that, and it creases in all of it to different degrees of severity. And so I did that process with all of them, and it doesn't take very long at all. I mean, I let them soak and it's not much soap, just barely a drop. In a bowl and for maybe 10 minutes, and then rinse them out and then iron them. And every one of those things, all the creases gone, just gone. And I knew I had the, if it didn't go away, I had the best press bottle of best press, that Vanna mentions as my backup, but I didn't need it. I didn't need it. All of it gone. And then I let them dry thoroughly and picked them up, and no hint of creases. So if you're looking for a way to get creases out of linen, that has worked. It costs nothing, and just a little bit of effort and some ironing, and gone, all the problems. So, and then I'm kind of proud of this one, because the two sampler ones I'm storing at least for a while. So I sandwiched them between acid-free tissue paper. And then I have a piece of 1.5 inch PVC pipe, so it's smooth. And then I wrap that around the pipe and then put it in a plastic bag. So then that keeps them wrapped around there so they don't get new wrinkles. And, and I had one piece wrapped around the pipe when I added these to it and took it off. Still perfect. So that's my storage method is in acid-free paper. Wrapped around PVC pipe. Yep.
So. That makes sense. That's a nice, and you could even stack those.
Right.
You know,
that's
a nice, easy way to do it.
Right.
I like that. And PVC pipe is so inexpensive. You can buy 2-foot lengths at Home Depot for next to nothing.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause they usually have a bin of pre-cut 2-foot lengths. Yeah.
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 I like that as an organizing tool, actually. So I think when I move my sewing sort of stuff, that might be the way that I do fabrics, because right now they're just kind of all jammed in different ways. But that might be, especially for things that tend, like silks and things that you can get wrinkles out easily, and fabrics that you fold, I might do differently. But for things that are, you know, difficult to get wrinkles out of, or canvases and things like that, I might do that method and just keep everything rolled exactly that way, because that would just be it's also a nice way to just be able to see what you have, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But and to me, the key is to sandwich it between acid-free tissue paper so that you don't have it touching the PVC, the cloth touching the PVC, and then you can store it and not worry about any chemicals interacting with each other. And So, yeah, so I'm all armed. I have all that done and ready to go. And but I can't, I can't get myself to put this sampler down. It just I have these other projects I want to work on, but I have to admit, I just am enjoying sitting there watching TV and stitching little motifs. And
yeah.
You know, an hour later I have a couple of motifs done and you feel a sense of accomplishment and it's just fun. So
that's like my Shakespeare one. It's silly, but you know, you have little things done all the time.
Yep. So I'm just going to do it. I don't care. It's my stuff. I can do what I want, you know?
So where did you get your acid-free tissue paper?
Krynek. I just went to Krynek. They have it. Just went to their online thing and just ordered some. Wasn't particularly expensive. I think you can get it other places. It wasn't popping up readily for me. And someone mentioned that Krynek had it. And so I just went there and got it. And I think it's handy stuff to have around because anything I have now, no matter how I store it, I first wrap it. If it's going to be long-term, I just wrap it in acid-free tissue paper. Then I know at least I've given it a minimum of protection from wherever it's at. It comes in a package just like you buy wrapping tissue paper from a, you know, from a hardware or from a, you know, a Walgreens or something. I mean, it's just folded up like that, but it's acid-free. So, it's right there and in their store online. So simple.
Excellent.
Yep. So enjoying the sampler. I really need to get back to my needlepoint, but right now I'm stitching a tree and a lion and I'm enjoying the lion. So that's what I'm going to do. Yep. Okay. We have to get in a couple of things now. All right. I got to take a deep breath here. A couple of things from Jane Wood's Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure and Treasure Chest of All Things That Are Interesting About Needlepoint and Needle Pointers from that website. Chili Hollow. Yes. Jane, if there's another one, you know, Mary Corbett, Vonna Pfeiffer, and Jane Wood. If you're not following those three all the time, you're probably missing out, just as a general thing. And Jane Wood really has, that is a real, we talk about Mary Corbett's site because that is the all-time resource for stitching and needlework of just about everything. Oh, and I forgot to mention, backing up the truck here. If you're washing linen to get wrinkles out, and it's something, if it's a piece that you're going to do that is going to be washed in the future, like a towel or a tablecloth or something like that that you're going to do, then don't use the method that I used. You go to Mary Corbett's site and you find the method she uses for shrinking the linen or shrinking the cotton. And she spells it all out step by step how to do it because you want to shrink that before you stitch it, because if you don't, then you stitch it and then you wash it and then it shrinks and yeah, that's going to get ugly. So that method I use is for stuff that's going to get framed. It's not going to see water, especially hot water. So just that caution. You go to Mary Corbett's site and get the proper instructions because you should pre-shrink it before you stitch. So with that side thing, so back to Jane Wood. You need to get her site and go to her site. But was just poking around there to see what stuff she had. And she still has a piece, painted canvas embellishment books that she had a list of books on there. I don't know, 6-7 books that you would use or that are written and designed to help you embellish painted canvases. And because you see that a lot, people are saying, all right, I've got this painted canvas, I'm not really sure what to do with it. Sure, I could pay somebody for a stitch guide, but I'd really like to try it on my own, but I need some resources. And that's what Jane has put together. So and there'll be a link for this, for it, as there is for everything, for the page for this podcast at wetalkfiber.com. Just a couple I pulled off there. Carol Lake has a new book called Just in the Nick of Time. And I think the point of that is I'm getting frustrated. I need a stitch. So here's a stitch. And so her book, Just in the Nick of Time, and that's new, like within the last couple, 3 months, I think. And then she mentioned a 3-book series from Suzanne Howren and Beth Robertson that Stitches for Effect. And she describes that series as the Bible for people who want to embellish canvas. So that that one. And Suzanne Howren's still with us, but she mentioned Beth Robertson. And I remember I've heard that name before, has passed on. So, but that book apparently has stood the test of time, that series of books. And then another one that she mentioned, it's 2 books from the Little Shop Canvas Company. One is called Stitch Landscape, and that's for objects in your canvas that are outdoors.
Cool.
Yeah. And then Stitch Ins and Outs is for items that are interior. And so I thought that was kind of a neat thing. Those books, and there's 3 or 4 others, but those stood out to me. But, if you're playing with painted canvas and not really sure what to do, or whether you have a Stitch guide or not and think you want to venture out and try something on your own, or the Stitch guide offers a stitch you just don't like, this would be a place to get some books to help you out. And I think those kinds of books just in general are good, whether you're have a painted canvas or if you're doing counted work, if you want to change one of the stitches, having those books. Yeah. Yeah.
I like the idea of the ones we were just talking about where they have, stitches that are particular to special textures. So the ones where you were saying for exteriors. So if you're trying to do a shingled building, these are some stitches that would, look good for that, because it kind of points you in the right direction. It's not just here's, 47 pretty stitches, and then you have to kind of look through and sort of squint your eyes and see what kind of looks like shingles. Somebody's giving you an idea of, if you need the side of a balloon, this is what, these are some things you could do, or, it makes sense, right? It kind of gives you a huge head start, especially if you haven't done painted canvas before, which is kind of where I'm thinking about it. Like painted canvas to me, and it sounds silly to people who do painted canvas, is a tiny bit intimidating because I look at it and I don't even know where to start other than to just fill spaces, right? So to have something that is a little bit of a guide of here, if you want to go for this texture, here's a bunch of stitches that really look like this thing. I like that, and then you can always branch from there. But if you have some of the basics, then you can start there. It's a cheat sheet, basically.
Yeah. Makes sense. And I'm with you too. You look at a canvas and you go, oh, what could I do with this? And you don't really know where to go. And of course you could basket weave everything, but that just makes me go to sleep. So
yeah, you don't want to do that because you know that there's so many more beautiful things you could do.
Right. And people who know what they're doing, if you study painted canvases, people who know what they're doing can, just with the stitches and the textures, just bring things to life. They create depth. The texture, obviously, the color. But really, it's depth. A lot of those almost are 3D visually, and it's just a flat piece of canvas. But it's because of the way they handled the stitching and what they did with it. And that's a real talent. People who can do that. And but having books that say exactly that. Yes, this will look like grass when you stitch it, or this will look like water, and you can create those effects. And So that was Jane Wood there with that. That's a helpful little list she has of books to help people with painted canvas, because that's the kind of thing. Because some people, it's always interesting to me how people will migrate toward painted canvas and think, oh, I can't, the counted canvas, I can't do that. I can't count, some of those
right
stitches.
Right now,
are...
I kind of. Looking at painted canvas and basket weave sounds pretty good to me.
Looking pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, there's no counting, and I don't have to think about it. And that sounds like about what I can do.
Yeah, so there we have it. Yeah, see something for everyone in this hobby. Absolutely.
I will tell you, so this is, you know, I will say that there have been quite a few moments of this endeavor, you know, since this silly car accident that have been a little stressful. And by a little, I mean quite. And the one thing that I keep coming back to is when I get frustrated because I can't do my job. My regular day job, I've tried and I just can't do it. I'm not there yet. Right. I don't have the brain power to do it. There's a lot of other things, like even reading a book, I just get too distracted to be able to read and I can't get through a page. And then I get frustrated and, you know, annoyed. And the one thing that I can do is, you know, do needlework, because you can do needlework and, you know, you can stop in the middle of something and then, you know, your mind can go a million places. It's kind of like a 3-year-old doing needlework in a way, because, you know, you get distracted, look away, and then you're, you know, you can go back to it. So where before I would be doing needlework and watching TV and planning dinner in my head and thinking about 4 other things, now I'm just doing this. And if TV's on, that's, you know, I'm not following it at all. But I can just do this, and that's enough. And it's the one thing that I can do where I don't have to follow anything. It's the thing I can do. So I keep coming back to it because I feel like I can accomplish something.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just needle through fabric again and again and again. And it's that one soothing thing. So I highly recommend it for brain injury recovery.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, the stresses of your job and your company, you know, needlework has given you that mental escape at night. And, yeah. And in the past couple of years, I've been through some incredibly stressful stuff with my company, and same thing. You know, okay. The work is done for the day, have dinner, and then I can just escape. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it really it helps. It really helps. Yeah,
it does. It does. And you know, sometimes that's all you can do, and that's okay too.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. It's a good thing. Everybody should try it once, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, we got to wrap up here. Sunday, Kathleen Littleton of Cross Stitch Antiques. And, oh, Kathleen and I had just a tremendous conversation about her careers and her stitching and stitching in general and samplers and all kinds of things. We had a great time. So
I'll just give one more anecdote. So Gary and I were speaking before this podcast, and, you know, we send emails back and forth with bios of people that we're going to talk about or talk to ahead of time and, you know, have lengthy conversations and things. And so we sat before this podcast and he said, you know, we was talking about Kathleen and I said, did I talk to her? He said, no, you didn't. And I read so much that I believed in my head that I had actually spoken to her. So there, that pretty much sums up where I am right now.
But see, a testament to the you're doing the prep work. See, the prep work was done.
Huh? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I
there.
Had so thoroughly studied it that it was as if I was there.
Just like that. Yep. Okay. All right. That's Sunday. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back again next Wednesday with more of this. Yeah. Progress. Christine Healing Progress next Wednesday.
Yes.
All right. Take care. We're out.